The approach of Dr. J.B. Ryan of Duke University, Durham, North Carolina, in his study of parapsychology typifies this scientific attitude. Certain other groups also have a proper scientific approach. We need this approach applied to every type of OSC. We need to investigate, study and evaluate all these methods scientifically. We are always out of balance on the physical side. We spend millions of dollars on a physical approach to outer space. What we have tried to point out is that outer space is more than physical, so why confine our efforts to the physical? Who can say that equal efforts in the realm of OSC will not get us into outer space faster than our present efforts along purely physical lines? Chapter 27. For engineers, scientists and thinkers everywhere, smashing the cosmic barrier. We on the Earth have been doing a bit of smashing of late. We have smashed the sonic barrier in the air. We have smashed the speed limit at which man can travel so often that here and there are about ready to give up the ghost. We are now making plans to smash the thermal barrier. The Campbell clan in England is taking delight in smashing the water barrier. And of course several nations are already smashing the atom. But the real barrier which we need to smash is the cosmic barrier. What do we mean by that? We refer to the barrier of incredible human ignorance which keeps us from cosmic knowledge. For thousands of years we on Earth, we of this particular round of civilization, have been cosmic isolationists. A great part of our consciousness of reality has actually been blacked out, so that we have been aware only of life on our own little fly speck which we call the Earth. We have been dead to the fact that we are not alone in the universe, dead to the fact that there is life all around us in the heavens, and that we are a part of an endless cosmic community of life, purpose, activity and progress. Of one thing we may be sure, that we will never understand spaceships, space people or outer space itself through the medium of a little finite mind, no matter how scientific or well-trained it may be in finite concepts or in reasoning from finite premises. There is no ignorance so dense as educated or scientific ignorance, the kind that can always prove to its own satisfaction that nothing can possibly be outside of its own limited concepts. Scientific finality is the death of scientific progress. The answers we are looking for are not to be found in the realms of eminent, respectable, conventional teachings, even though they bear the label of science and the seal of time. Three-dimensional concepts not adequate. At this point, please permit me to ask our engineering and scientific friends a simple question. How many of you have studied teleportation? Frankly, I for one would not know how to approach the subject of intergalactic space travel without talking about teleportation. How many of you have studied teleportation? What? Not one of you? What in the name of cosmic truth is wrong with our present-day technical schools? Are we at fault or is it our schools? No courses in teleportation. No knowledge of levitation either. How can we approach an intelligent discussion of the principles upon which space travel is based if our education in cosmic concepts has been so woefully neglected? The old Friedman-Sunnel concepts will not explain the modern phenomena of space travel or the actions of spaceships or space people. We must seek new and cosmic concepts before we can intelligently start upon the design or construction of a flying saucer or a magnificent intergalactic spaceship. In fact, we need these cosmic concepts before we can even perform worthwhile experimentation. Three-dimensional ideas will never produce a four-dimensional product. Is that not correct? Books with a cosmic viewpoint. Where in the name of heaven can you and I start to learn about spacecraft engineering? Can we expect to learn from those three-dimensional textbooks which our technical schools give us? Or from those fat and expensive little engineering handbooks? We will grant you that they are crammed full of endless three-dimensional knowledge. But we are now dealing with phenomena which extend beyond three-dimensional truths. And if we wish to understand space travel, we will have to screw up our core age and start reaching out for four-dimensional and higher-dimensional books and concepts. In other words, cosmic concepts. So we suggest at this point that we all throw away our three-dimensional textbooks, or at least lay them aside for the time being. Let us start picking up and studying some four-dimensional books. Let us get our minds out of the old three-dimensional ruts that our technical schools have pounded us into until we are literally hypnotized into a limited space-time amateur view of life and reality. Someone has to break this hypnotism, and that is what we mean when we refer to breaking through the hard shell of educated ignorance, and the need of smashing the cosmic barrier. How can we do it? By turning our attention to books, writings and OSC messages with a cosmic outlook. We suggest that we start with Philo's great book A Dweller on Two Planets. Some practical engineers regard this book as a great eye-opener to cosmic engineering. It tells of civilizations on this Earth thousands of years ago in which spaceships were so common that the little ones were used like taxicab slits. Is also filled with many hints regarding the principles on which they operated without fuel. While we are at it, why not make a study of the manner in which this book was written? If we are open-minded, we may learn a thing or two about the different ways in which cosmic knowledge comes to those who possess a certain peculiar degree of receptivity to it. We may even cut our eye teeth on the present actuality of OSC outer space communication. If your conventionality has not thwarted you by now and caused you to turn back, congratulations. You are now making a start at least in the direction of cosmic knowledge and where some of it may be found, and that should be an important thing to you. If you are still with us, we suggest that you next turn to Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda. Let us not become frightened. We are not turning to this book so we may all become yogis. That is not the point. Let us study it with detachment, scientifically, from an engineer's viewpoint. In it we may learn about universal energy called prana. We may discover what prana can do in a human body when this ever-present energy is consciously controlled and directed. Once we learn that there is such a thing as levitation and that people have lived for 20 years without physical food, then the question of where spaceships get their energy and how they overcome gravity may not seem so baffling to us. These are samples of conditioning books for conditioning thought in the direction of cosmic truth. Other similar books are listed at the end of this book. After you have once broken the ice, you can find your own books of this nature. If you do not like these particular books, get some other books, but be sure they are in the cosmic range of thought. We must get out of the old three-dimensional rut. We must go cosmic if we wish to understand cosmic things beyond the physical plane. Expanding our horizons. Engineers and scientists of this generation have an unprecedented opportunity for breaking down the high partitions that have separated and divided man's knowledge of the truths of existence. From what we have learned about our advanced space brothers, they have been able to merge the divided portions of knowledge which we call science, physics, astronomy, engineering, morality, religion, philosophy, metaphysics and the occult. They have been able to merge all of these parts of knowledge into one great whole which they call cosmic truth, or cosmic law, or the universal law. By doing this they have progressed to degrees of mastery which make us look like kindergarten children. We are not talking about fanciful things. Engineers have to be practical, and we are talking only of practical things. Truth is truth. It is a seamless garment. There are no divisions in it. It is these man-made divisions of knowledge that have for ages slowed us down to a snail's pace in cosmic progress. But the darkness is even now giving way to the light at an accelerated pace. It is smart engineering to recognize these things. Some of the most successful engineers we have known are both engineers and metaphysicians. They are cosmic thinkers. They combine the knowledge of the physical and the supraphysical into a successful engineering practice which has caused their associates to call them marvels or geniuses. The head of a certain sizable industry in a great city, unknown to his associates, is an adept, a seer. He has learned and is practicing a type of what is called meditation that gives him all the answers he needs. His wisdom and judgment are astounding. This illustrates modern cosmic engineering practice. We must expand our horizons as to our sources of cosmic information. Let us remember the following. The Earth is about 7 billion years old from the time it began to get solid. A lot of school children have passed through this schoolhouse the Earth during this time. Many long-forgotten civilizations have come and gone which were far in advance of us today. Some of these past civilizations had their atomic power, and what is more important, they had better and less destructive sources of energy. They also had spaceships, some of which at least overcame gravity and burned no fuel. Thus we, who think of ourselves as such an advanced civilization, are only relearning what our ancestors knew countless ages ago. There is literally nothing new under the sun. There are very few historical or even archaeological records of these things on Earth, but there are inspired writings and OSC messages which tell about them. Also, ancient occult teachings and philosophies are brimful of cosmic principles which relate both directly and indirectly to space travel and man's mastery over energy or matter. We realize this world is filled with engineers and scientists who are burning with the desire to build spaceships and space platforms and to get out into the fascinating and fathomless regions of outer space. Wonderful, we say. Keep it up. We are with you all the way, shall we say, to the Moon, to Mars, to Venus, to Jupiter. But why stop there? The goal is really outer space itself. Let us never give up the desire to get there. Everything starts with desire, and it is a potent factor in all progress. And fortunately, cosmic progress is the destiny of man, including, of course, engineers and scientists. But what we are pointing out is that outer space is more than a physical thing, and that physical engineering is not enough to get us there. We must get into cosmic engineering. It is a wise engineer who will learn all he can about levitation, precipitation, teleportation and allied subjects. This knowledge is not to be found through conventional sources. We must turn to inspired writings, books with a cosmic viewpoint, and even OSC. The most direct way to learn about spaceships is to ask the man who owns one, or at least to get in touch with the extraterrestrial intelligences who know about them. Impossible. Not at all, but there may be certain restrictions on the information they give out. Such information must not be used destructively or selfishly. But why overlook these avenues to cosmic knowledge? It might save us years, or even decades, of haphazard human experimentation. The Earth as a spaceship. Before we go on to further discussions of spacecraft technology, let us ask you the question which caused so much excitement for us in Mexico City. Did you ever see or talk to a spaceman? Certainly you have. You and your neighbor are spacemen or spacewoman. We are all space people. We live in space. Do we not, even though we know only precious little about it? And we travel through space. The trouble with us is that we have been so engrossed in the little affairs of this world that we have almost forgotten these tremendous truths. We are space people right now. Many engineers say they would give anything for a ride on a spaceship. But we have been riding on a spaceship for years. Our spaceship at the present time is of rounder sign and is called the Earth. Of course, we are not privileged to steer this particular spaceship anywhere we wish. In fact, the space beings tell us that if we understood the technology of this ship, it would help us tremendously in building an artificial one. Many of us are aghast at the speeds of flying saucers. But if they travel at fantastic speeds, well, our own little spaceship does not exactly loaf. Let us consider a few of the speed characteristics of our spaceship, the Earth. The Earth at the equator is roughly 24,000 miles around, and it turns on its axis once in 24 hours. This represents a speed of about 1,000 miles per hour for those of us who live near the equator. It would be slightly less for those who live a little farther away from the equator. The speed of sound at sea level is only about 750 miles per hour, so most of us space people have been nonchalantly traveling faster than the speed of sound without batting an eyelash. We have all of us, every one of us, cracked the sonic barrier. But this is not all. Our spaceship cruises around the sun once a year in a long loop many millions of miles in length at an approximate speed of over 66,000 miles per hour. This is more than 10 times the speed of our fastest rockets. That is going some, is it not? But now hang on to your hats. Some elementary astronomy books tell us that the part of the galaxy in which our spaceship cruises is itself moving through space at some 170 miles per second. That, my friends, is about 612,000 miles per hour, more than half a million miles per hour. If we could steer our spaceship and point it toward Venus, at that rate we could reach Venus in about 42 hours. So why be shocked when someone speaks of the fantastic speeds of spaceships? We are not so slow ourselves. Now one important question. We know that storms or winds blowing say at 150 miles per hour can damage a city. How come then that we space people traveling at over 600,000 miles per hour through space manage to survive? Why don't our hats blow off, followed by our clothes and our skin? Why is not our spaceship the Earth blown to bits? You have guessed it. Our atmosphere travels along with our ship. Our spaceship carries its own protective field or protective atmosphere along with it. Ponder this, friends, and you may get an inkling of how spaceships survive at fantastic speeds even if outer space is filled with dangerous cosmic debris and violent cosmic rays which the unprotected human body cannot withstand. By the way, we have not even yet mentioned any cosmic ultimate in speed. Many deep thinkers place this at the apparent speed of light or at about 670 million miles per hour. Our research indicates that even this concept of ultimate speed needs revising. Instantaneous intergalactic travel can never be explained by any such human concepts as time, space and three-dimensional matter. Three explanations of space travel. On our pilgrimage we found three different explanations of space travel. These are, first, the physical explanation, secondly, the combined explanation and thirdly the cosmic explanation. Let us now consider these three with great care. Please refer to chapter 21 for definitions. The physical explanation of space travel. In this explanation everything is physical and stays physical all the time. A normally physical spaceman living on the surface of a physical planet gets into a physical spaceship and makes a space-time type of flight at X miles per hour to the physical Earth. It is a miles per hour type of space travel such as we recognize on Earth, only much faster, up into the hundreds of thousands of miles per hour. It would have to be this, otherwise even trips between the planets of our solar system would take a long time. To overcome the problems of propulsion, acceleration, cosmic ray bombardment and cosmic debris, some form of cosmic energy is harnessed and is converted into the required effects of levitation, directional motion, independent gravitational field and a protective force about the ship. In this concept of space travel, nothing approaching teleportation is employed. The spaceman and the spaceship never depart from the physical state of matter. A trip to Earth starts from a physical plane, continues physical during flight and winds up physical on the Earth. This is the 100% physical explanation of space travel. It is basically the same as our space-time or miles per hour type of travel, only more so, with new means of propulsion, gravity control and protection. The combined explanation of space travel. In this explanation, a flight starts from a physical plane on a physical basis, goes into teleportation en route, but winds up on a physical basis. A normally physical spaceman residing on the surface of a physical planet is sufficiently evolved to understand teleportation and to apply it to space travel. May we point out that this is a very different thing from mere physical flight. It involves converting the entire spaceship and the bodies of the passengers into energy during flight, and then reconverting this energy back to matter and form. The spaceship is constructed of suitable materials which are adapted to teleportation. On Earth at present we do not know this combination of materials, although we may have the elements needed. Note that the spaceman's body must also be capable of teleportation. This involves a temporary re-chemicalization or change in the atomic structure of the physical body. Our present Earth bodies are ill-adapted to this mutation even if we knew how to accomplish it. But the spaceman is sufficiently advanced to understand and control these activities of energy. The spaceman enters his ship in a physical state and takes off for the Earth. At first he employs physical flight. the miles per hour or space-time kind of flight we are familiar with. But he has millions of miles to go. Space-time flight is too slow for him. Therefore, he turns temporarily to teleportation or timeless flight to speed his journey. He converts his spaceship and himself temporarily into energy. He tunes into Earth's atmosphere and instantly finds himself there. He then reconverts his ship to physical matter and flies the remaining short distance to the surface of the Earth by the conventional or miles per hour method. If an Earthman happens to be watching at the instant of conversion, the spaceship will seem to emerge from nowhere. In conventional flight in the Earth's atmosphere, the speed of the spaceship is limited to say about 25,000 miles per hour by frictional resistance despite the protective radiation employed. In the teleportation stage there is no speed limit, not even the so-called speed of light. When the spaceman steps off his ship onto the Earth, both he and his ship are as solid or physical as any Earthman could wish. In fact, he started that way from his physical planet. Physicality is his normal state. The teleportation represented only a temporary superphysical state used to speed up the trip. This is the combined explanation of space travel. Its norm is physical. It starts on a physical basis but loses its physical status momentarily due to teleportation. Then it returns to the physical. The spaceship and the spaceman must be capable of both space-time flight and teleportation. The cosmic explanation of space travel. In this explanation, physicality is not the norm at all. Physicality is only a temporary state which the space beings employ to make us aware of them. In this case, we are not dealing with beings who are normally physical or three-dimensional, and live on the surface of planets. We are dealing with true space beings. They live in outer space itself in a different plane of consciousness, in a higher frequency or octave of life. They and their entire civilizations are beyond the range of our physical senses. We cannot normally see them or touch them, but they have a solidity and reality of their own. These advanced space beings are not vaporous or even sent. This is a great mistake which many otherwise good researchers make. They have their own solid ground, their families, buildings, libraries, schools, factories, power plants, governments, and spaceships. But we must realize that all this exists in the higher frequencies of outer space. In fact, these higher frequencies of reality interpenetrate our own three-dimensional space-time matter frequency. These great beings are far in advance of us both technically and morally. They are masters of energy, which means that they are also masters of matter. They can instantly convert matter to energy and vice versa. Their normal substance or matter is different from ours in both frequency and mode of vibration. Their matter can pass through our matter unobserved and without damage to either. Time and space are not entities outside of their control. However, they realize that the limitations of time and space are very real to us. There are only two ways in which these space beings can become visible and tangible to us. Either they must descend into our frequency or we must ascend into their frequency. There are not many Earthmen who can accomplish this, but there are a few who to a certain extent can go up the frequency elevator. In most cases of contact, however, the space beings have to come down to our level. Now let us assume that a spaceman of this advanced nature wishes to visit the Earth. The first thing to note is that he can do this without any equipment whatsoever. Without any spaceship if he wishes to. He can do it as a being invisible to us, which he normally is, or he can adjust his frequency and form to our norm and appear to us as a physical being. This is one type of cosmic space flight in which no equipment is used. If the spaceman wishes to come to Earth with a large spaceship full of equipment and personnel, all the material and personnel are moved into the spaceship. A better name than spaceship would be a converter, an energy or frequency converter. To the spaceman, the operation of flying to the Earth has very little to do with time or space or miles per hour. He may, however, employ space-time flight to a small extent at the end of his trip, mostly to avoid scaring us to death. When all is ready, the spaceman tunes the entire spaceship and its contents into the frequency of Earth and instantly arrives at the destination. This is a type of teleportation or instantaneous cosmic travel. At this point, the spaceship, although it has reached the atmosphere of our Earth, may still be in a state of matter both invisible and intangible to us. A further mutation of energy brings it into a physical state which we can both see and feel. The ship can then proceed by the space-time method of travel to the surface of the Earth. However, we understand that the large ships rarely land, although it has happened in isolated areas of the Earth in a few cases. Most of these ships are very large, too large for our airports. Usually they launch smaller scout saucers with men and equipment aboard them for specific missions on the surface of the Earth. Or they may send out remote-controlled saucers to study certain conditions. When spacemen come to Earth in this manner, it is possible to see them and talk to them and touch them. In this condition they resemble human beings like ourselves. But remember, this is an abnormal state of matter for them to be in. When they teleport themselves back to their homes, they live there normally in a different frequency, a different state of substance, outside of the tuned range of our physical senses. When they are temporarily on Earth, someone may ask them, "What planet are you from?" Instantly they may sense that the questioner is incapable of understanding their true nature. They may telepathically discern that he can only comprehend life as physical on the surface of a physical planet, that the reality of life in higher frequencies is beyond his range of thought. Therefore they adapt their reply to the mentality of the questioner, wave their hands toward the sky and say, "Oh, we are from Venus, or Mars, or from a planet behind the moon." This is the cosmic explanation of space travel. Its norm is cosmic throughout. It starts from a plane above the physical and employs teleportation and energy conversion to bring the spaceships and the space beings temporarily into our physical range of awareness. It is timeless, cosmic space travel. An OSC message explaining cosmic transportation. By courtesy of Mr. George Van Tassel. The following extraordinary information on cosmic transportation was received in an OSC message in 1955 by Mr. George Van Tassel of Giant Rock, California. We are including it for two reasons. First, because we feel certain that many saucer investigators will appreciate it. We know that many students are not satisfied with the offhand and casual explanation with which saucer phenomena are often dismissed. We believe they would like to hear what a spaceman has to say about cosmic transportation. Secondly, because we would like to illustrate the quality and depth of some of the technical information which is coming to Earth by OSC methods, but which ordinarily is not made public because of its advanced nature. This explanation of cosmic transportation was given by a spaceman who was in direct charge of certain cosmic transportation activities, a being who should know because transportation is his specialty in higher dimensions of life. A verbatim transcript would be too lengthy for this book. Therefore we have, with the permission of Mr. Van Tassel, condensed the message into a brief summary of the sequence of operations as given by the spaceman. Here it is in brief. First, we isolate a cubic portion of what you call space by charging feet or ionizing it. The size of the cube is determined by the size of the objects, material and personnel we wish to transport. It may measure a few of your yards on a side or some thousands of miles depending on what is being transported. Secondly, we move everything we wish to transport into this cube in space: people, materials, objects, even scores of large spacecraft, if desired. Thirdly, we create a vibratory null or silence inside of the cube. This is something we have learned to do. Fourthly, we tune into the place we wish to go to, the destination. Fifthly, we release the null and find ourselves instantly at our destination. Comment: we are very grateful to Mr. Van Tassel for permission to publish this. During our research we have found some extraordinary information received by OSC methods. Apparently the higher one goes in the scale of cosmic evolution, the nearer does the activity of transportation approach a direct mental control of time, space and matter rather than a physical phenomenon. Emergence and transcendence. We have selected the terms emergence and transcendence to cover the activities of spaceships and space beings when they come into or pass out of our limited state of awareness. In Chapter 21 we explained the difficulty of finding suitable words to convey the nature of such activities or mutations.